surgeries performed around the globe today. Suna, clitorindectomy, and infibulation, also known as pharynx circumcision. The third type, pharynx, is known to be the most egregious as it is the most elaborate. It entails a complete excision of the clitoris, labia, and then the vulva is stitched closed. 135 million of these women live in 28 African countries. During the mutilation process, no anesthetic is used. Women or girls are often held down by others with their legs open. Mutilation is carried out by a variety of instruments, usually none of them surgical. Broken glass, scissors, a razor blade, or even a sharpened rock. Amnesty International has been concerned with the human rights aspects of FGM for over 15 years. The 1951 UN Convention, which relates to the status of refugees, has been applied to several women seeking asylum to escape the possibility of FGM. In 1993, Canada granted refugee status to a Somali woman who fled her country with her 10-year-old daughter. Female genital mutilation is not limited to the continent of Africa. Advocacy groups are located all around the world. If you are listening now and would like to know more about the practice of female genital mutilation, or you would like to advocate for the process to stop, there are several organizations that you can contact. PAI, Population Action International. Another organization that can be reached in New York is RAINBOW. That stands for Research, Action, and Information Network for Bodily Integrity of Women. Or contact NOCIRC. That's the National Organization of Circumcision Information Resource Centers FGM Awareness and Education Project. My name is Angel Fall. If you have comments or questions about today's piece, you may email me at angelfall@snet.net.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to Yifat Suskind, media director for the women's human rights group MADRE, madre.org. Our contributors this week included Angel Fall, who provided our report on female genital mutilation. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at Ursula, U-R-S-U-L-A, at Pacifica.org. I'm your producer and host, Dori Smith. See you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's Bathurst Pier's Broadsides. It's the March 9th edition. Stay tuned.
My mom's a feminist, so I understand. That's why I'm here today. I've come to lend a hand. I was raised on equal rights, and furthermore, she helped me see that equality is a goal worth fighting for.
Think you got it? Dirty trick, you'll get it.
I pulled into the lower. decided she could do some good, ringing doorbells in the neighborhood. Not for the Girl Scouts, but for ERA. Sometimes she takes her friends along. She's only 10, but she's already strong. She's a mover and a shaker well on her way. When they ask what she's doing, this is what she'll say.
That was Kristen Lems from the early 80s, Struggles for ERA, and struggles that aren't over yet. Welcome to Bathrop's Piers Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. I'm Robert Norse. We also are streaming, of course, at freakradio.org. I regret to inform you that so far we have not yet been able to locate the missing audio files of our last 100 shows, which were posted on the website and have collapsed. So we're scavenging through the wreckage looking for them and scanning the horizon in search of a sale, but so far those shows are not available, which to me would be a really sad loss. But we're going to keep on broadcasting anyway, and hopefully we'll move into the future with some new stuff, even if we lose all the old stuff. This is a show that deals with civil rights and political controversies in Santa Cruz. We try to follow particular breaking stories impacting poor and homeless people that are on the cutting edge, even if some of the progressive hypocrites get cut so every so often. And we invite you to join this dialogue and discussion at 427-3772. That's the call-in number, 427-3772. If you're out of the area, it's 831-427-3772. Second number as well, which I'll give out if the first number is actually loaded. So feel free to call in. You can also check, I think we are, well, you know, I can't, unfortunately, I'm unable to access the chat room today. Normally we go out on pagesincolor.com. However, the studio now is apparently unable to download the plugin thanks to some, I guess, strange computer shenanigans that are happening here. Rather than attack the computer with my teeth, I will continue with the show and suggest that if you do have something to say, feel free to call 427-3772. Or if you want to talk off air, it's 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I had hoped to have a guest today. I'm afraid maybe this guest just doesn't know where the studio is, and he thought he did. I'm afraid that may be the situation. We may have to reschedule. The guest was Micah Posner of People Power, who's going to be talking about some activism in Sacramento and locally around bicycles and poverty and all the implications thereof. Micah, if you're listening to me on the air because you have a radio nearby, call in and let me know. Maybe I can guide you into the studio. We are a little anxious here these days because the FCC has recently paid a visit to Berkeley Liberation Radio. And there's always the chance that they may come back to us as they did a year and a half ago and attempt to loot the studio as they did then, or maybe even kidnap some of the people and hold them for ransom and attempt to imprison them for a period of time or extort money from them. That's a peculiar phenomenon, kind of a strange menace we have here in this country. When you try to use the community airwaves and don't follow the corporate rules that essentially exclude poor people and alternate voices from the community airwaves. So we're doing it anyway. We've done it for 10 years. We'll continue to do it. And we are, however, on the alert because Captain Fred reports that 104.1 FM Berkeley Liberation Radio was visited by the FCC agents 3 weeks ago. And there is still that anxiety here as to whether we will see a similar interest on the part of the Fox, corporate foxish types, and not particularly foxy government folks. But hey, that shouldn't stop us from proceeding, and it won't. And also, it's not going to stop me from proceeding with what I want to do here. I'm going to make a few announcements first, then I'm going to play a little more, I believe, of Kristen Lems. I think this this tape has more on it. And then we're going to move into a few street interviews. The Renegades have arrived, so we may actually... we may have some music for you, as well as some questionable propaganda against our internal combustion engines, of course, which I'm a prime advocate and a major user here. Just a couple of quick announcements first. Alonzo Ebersole was the medical marijuana user who we interviewed about 6 months ago. You may remember he was picked up in one of the parks, state parks, by a ranger who bagged him, arrested him for a felony for essentially carrying marijuana, which he had grown himself and which he used for his own medical condition. And we kind of we talked about that on the air with a number of local marijuana advocates. And he goes back to court on that whole issue after quite a lengthy and rather grotesque series of legal maneuvers that the Bob Lee's prosecution, that's our district attorney, has put him through, and Bob Lee's particular hatchet man on this job, Archie Weber, who is a district attorney I've tangled with and will tangle with again when I go to trial on April 17th. I'm facing charges of disrupting a public meeting for insisting on our right under the Brown Act to comment on different items on the city council agenda beyond the five-minute total of time that Mayor Rotkin and under Mayor Rotkin's direction, the current city council has decreed, which essentially puts people in a position where if they've spoken for more than 5 minutes on different items, they can't speak on any other items, which I believe, and I think it's pretty clearly, violates the Brown Act right to speak on numerous items. So that's tomorrow at 9 o'clock in Department 7. If you're really interested, too, you can also check out another thing that's going to be happening in my case, a pitches motion. For those of you who don't know what it is, I'm going to try to get it court permission to record it, but the courts have gotten very secretive, and it's kind of hard to get that permission. Pitches motion is a motion where you ask the court to examine the record of police officers who are testifying to see if there are complaints against them which might reflect on their credibility, and then you're allowed to go get those people who made the complaints and have them testify. We're going to try to get that process started with Lieutenant Clark, who had me falsely arrested at City Council way back in June. But before I continue with this lengthy, I think important series of kind of notes for the introduction, I'm remembering that we do have a limited time here with our guests who may have to hustle out of here in an untoward fashion. How much time have you guys got, anyway? All right, we got 15 to 30 minutes. Let's invite the new participants here to kind of belly up to the mic here. There's a microphone here, Micah. Micah, go to the mic. I love it. And we also have Peter, is that right? Peter has whipped out this monster guitar. It's actually a rather regulation-sized guitar. It looks monster in our small studio. And I'm going to actually turn up the microphone so you can actually hear these people. I know I'm much more pleasant to hear, but still, we have to have the occasional guest. So I'd like to introduce my guests this evening, Micah Posner and Peter
Weiss.
Micah, just what exactly is it that you do in the community, and why are you wandering into the studio this time of night?
I'm an advocate for sensible transportation, so I work a lot on bicycle projects and pedestrian projects and try to reduce the subsidization of automobiles, and that's what we're working on right now. Tonight I came in because hopefully people realize that the County Transportation Commission, the county government, is still trying to widen Highway 1, even though last year I was part of a coalition that beat Measure J substantially, clearly, at a 57 to 43% margin. And they're trying to sneak around that initiative and around democracy and widen the highway in stages using state monies. So we're going to Sacramento. We're going to the Capitol, and we're going to tell the state what's going on here and that they shouldn't fund this project.
So when are you leaving, and how can folks, if they're interested, help out?
Come to Sacramento. That'd be the best thing. We're leaving next Wednesday, March 15th.
You'll be providing the bicycle wheels and the sandwiches?
We're actually taking the bus and train. And it's March 15th, and we're meeting at the metro station at 7:30 a.m. And we'll be back between 8 and 10 at night, same day. And if you don't have money, the trip costs $50, but if you don't have money, we do have scholarships, and we need your help. And if you want to go or want to get more information, give me a call at 425-0665. This is Micah with People Power, trying to organize your help to stop the highway behemoth. Call me up at 425-0665.
That's going to be at what time on March 15th?
We're leaving at 7:30 in the morning, and we'll be back between 8 and 10 in the evening.
And what day is that?
It's a Wednesday, March 15th.
Okay, that's almost about a week away from today.
Yeah, we're looking for kind of people that want to, you know, overthrow the powers that be, and hopefully some of those people aren't fully employed.
Uh-huh.
Those two things tend to go together in my mind.
Hmm. Have you been to Sacramento before in a similar quest?
I haven't been to Sacramento yet. I'm a little surprised because I have been trying to raise trouble everywhere I go.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to meet with a representative from John Laird, first of all.
He's going to
tell us the P's and Q's, and then we're going to this meeting of the California Transportation Commission.
Assemblyman John Laird, formerly Lord Laird of the City Council, what has been his record on transportation issues? Good, bad, indifferent?
He tries to stay away from them as far as possible.
Use a bicycle, a car, a tricycle, a jet plane? What's his deal?
Well, he mainly uses a car. He does ride around town some, and he actually joined People Power, sort of to show that he shares some of our concerns. But he hasn't, at least in a public way, helped us with this issue. We don't know what he's doing behind the scenes. Maybe this is all going to work out because he's talking to the right people and shaking the right hands. But he doesn't. He really is running as far as he can from being in the middle of this controversy over Highway 1, at least publicly.
Now, Highway 1, some supporters of the widening claim will be a more effective means of, for example, facilitating mass transit, bus transportation, if it's actually got an extra lane or it's wider. What's your response to this proposal there?
Well, true to your amazing facility to pick out every gritty detail, Robert, you've picked the one part of the widening highway thing that might be helpful. So we could actually spend more than $350 million, and it would probably help four buses get to Watsonville faster. So that would be nice, and I don't think it's worth it for, what is that, like $75 or $90 million per bus. We could also put in a small train for something like $100 million and run people to Watsonville without, you know, using those four buses on the highway, or do a multitude of other things with that money.
Now, were you involved at all in this attempt to establish a bike path that was demolished by persons unknown over on the, along the east side there?
It was Union Pacific that demolished it.
It
was Union Pacific, yeah.
Were these crazed railroad engineers or?
It was just crazed people that feel like they should have some human right to move themselves. I mean, you know, I'm an admirer of your work, Robert, and other people, other homeless activists, because it gets to basic human rights, like the right to sleep. And our human right is the right to move ourselves without paying, you know, 30% of our income to own a car. So we're just so sick of it that some people went out and built a trail. And it was just sort of an example of, like, gosh, how easy could it be to move yourself? Because the reason people don't move themselves is not because they don't want to, or they're lazy, or it's because there's no good place to do it, because our public space has been turned into a frickin' pinball machine, and you risk your life hanging around with those cars.
So what's the reason you did this, you and others did this, was because you were concerned about the slowness with which the alternate rail proposal was proceeding, or the bike path there's been money appropriated for a bike path through up and down the coast, right? And it just hasn't happened yet.
It hasn't happened yet because they're for a lot of reasons. But one thing is that we don't own the rail corridor yet. We're in negotiation with Union Pacific about it. And Union Pacific needs to know that this is a public use of space and that we're damn well going to use this corridor, whether they like it or not. So that was part of our motivation, was to sort of send a message to Union Pacific, which succeeded, obviously, since they responded with, you know, large machinery. And then the other thing was just to show people how easy it is, because, I mean, there's all this, the government talks for hours, could we really build a rail trail, what would it take, blah, blah. So, you know, a dozen people went out in some weekends and built a, you know, reasonably good rail trail. So we want to do it as a demonstration project.
Just trying to put union workers out of work, aren't you? Admit it. This is a scab activity on your part.
Well, we would hire union labor to help with our guerrilla rail trail.
Oh, so you don't want undocumented workers. This is a racist move.
We would also hire undocumented workers, as long as they are undocumented union workers, actually.
Okay. Well, I'm going to keep an eye on YouTube, but I don't want to ignore the second part of this questionable partnership. Peter Weiss?
Yeah, that's right.
Peter, it looks like you're ready to strum over there. What have we got in mind? First of all, who the hell are you, and what, why are you hanging out with this guy?
Well, that's a good question. I know Micah from years ago, backpacking trips in the Sierras, and I'm just a big believer in trying to change the system. And, I've been working on a kids' album for Earth Day, actually, because I have a couple of kids. One of them's 5 years old, and I've been playing in her kindergarten class. And the kids just love singing about environmental things, and I just feel like it's the best way to get the message out there. And so I wanted to write a song about freeways and about Micah's work. And so I talked to him and just asked him a few questions. And then just last week I wrote this song, which is called The Funny Thing About Freeways.
Go for it. Let's hear it.
Okay. Can everything be heard? Okay.
I hope so.
Okay. Here we go. Yeah, right. funny thing about freeways, not free these days. They cost a lot to maintain, and they are a financial drain. They also go through wild places, chopping up the open spaces. Makes it hard for wildlife to walk around, and creates a roaring sound. Then there's places like Santa Cruz, where people sing the traffic blues. They keep saying they want to move more stuff. They keep saying it's not wide enough. Well, I'm hoping they'll build me a bicycle trail that stretches for 50 miles. And people will be using people power, riding as they smile at one another as they pass by to get to work and to school. It wouldn't pollute, won't be dangerous. Yeah, wouldn't that be cool? Funny thing about freeways, they're not free these days. They most likely will expand, gobbling up more precious land. And people feel so disconnected from each other, and our lives are affected. Pick one day to walk or ride, don't use a car, you decide. Well, I'm hoping they'll build me a bicycle trail that stretches for 50 miles. And people will be using people power, riding as they smile at one another as they pass by to get to work and to school. It wouldn't pollute, won't be dangerous, and wouldn't that be cool? Funny thing about freeways, they're not free these days. Fouling up our clean air, not just here but everywhere. For CO2 that comes out the pipe warms us up both day and night. A warmer world you might not care, but think about the polar bear. Well, I'm hoping they'll build me a bicycle trail that stretches for 50 miles. And people will be using people power, riding as they smile at one another as they pass by to get to work and to school. It wouldn't pollute, won't be dangerous. Now, wouldn't that be cool?
Everybody.
The funny thing about freeways, they're not free these days.
Woo!
Thank you.
That was Peter Weiss doing A Funny Thing About Freeways. Have you done other songs as well? Are you a professional songwriter?
Yeah, I've been writing songs for over 20 years now and been in bands. I just moved back to Santa Cruz from Seattle. I used to live here in the late 80s, mm-hmm. So I was gone for about 15 years, and I was in a couple of bands in Seattle and put out a couple of CDs. But I'm working on a kids' album right now, and so look for it, and hopefully I'll be playing on some Earth Day stage somewhere around the area.
That's coming up, man.
Yeah, April 22nd.
Website is what?
PeterWeissMusic.com. Give me a couple weeks and it'll be up.
PeterWeiss.
Yeah, Weiss.
And what about you, Micah? How can people get more information about People Power on the web?
People Power SC for Santa Cruz. PeoplePowerSC.org.
And
I think we're going to come back on Sunday on George's show with Peter.
Oh, it'll be between three
six.
And
six. Yeah. Oh.
Three and six.
Maybe five.
Green five.
Anyways, you should listen to all of George's show, and I think we'll be on it at some point there, singing another song.
Yeah, but we had you first here, that is.
Absolutely.
The royal we. I had you
right,
first.
Right.
So again, you're off on the 15th next Wednesday, 7:30 a.m. A $50 trip to try to persuade that local legislator John Laird to do what?
Now, we're not actually seeing John Laird's staff is actually helpful, but it's not ostensibly up to John Laird. We're going to the meeting of the California Transportation Commission. So the California Transportation Commission gets requests from all the counties all across the state for money for their projects. And they can only fill like a third of those requests because they don't have the money because Schwarzenegger stole it. So we're going to tell them, give the money to Turlock. You know, we're going to tell them, hey, don't fund this particular project, which should be pretty easy because they're looking for people not to disappoint. I just mentioned Laird because we will meet with his staff, and I think they will be helpful and help us show us around and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But actually, we're going to the meeting of the California Transportation Commission.
Is Laird a supporter of this proposal? Is he trying to get the money for our district so that the highway can be widened?
Or? He won't tell us. He's just trying to stay the
secret.
Heck out of it.
It's a secret. Do you have John Laird's number so people can call in and sort of find out what John, I've got a secret, Laird is actually doing here?
I know, but it's definitely in the phone book. You can call him at his local
office. If anybody has a
phone
book, find out John Laird's number. Call the show, 427-3772. And we're before you.
Let me really tell you why you should go. You should go first of all because it's going to be fun. We're taking the train, and like I said, if you can't afford it, you know, we can pay for it. Peter Scott is one of the most excellent old time activists in town. He helped get the green. But him and his wife really got the green belts down.
Celia Scott,
right? He's going to bring his banjo. Jeff Kaplan's coming. He's a heck of a funny guy, and he's bringing a lot of funny signs that say, give the money to Turlock.
Will you be feeding people as well? We might get a whole passel of homeless people to come with you on this trip.
Well, maybe I better feed people, if Robert suggests. I haven't thought that through yet.
But, they can scavenge, right, I guess. Right, you know, so, dumpster dive as right. We go.
So one thing is it's going to be fun, and then the second thing is that you should really be pissed off, because if you're out there listening and you voted against Measure J last year, you know, to widen the highway, they're completely blowing you off. They're telling you that what you told them doesn't matter anything. So it's time to get a little, you know, a little angry and take this struggle to Sacramento and say, we're not gonna let you sneak around our democracy.
Does anybody want to call? We got to have a caller here. Actually, there is a caller. Let's see. Sorry, caller. Caller, you're on Free Radio with Peter, Robert, and Micah.
Hey, Robert, just Andrea checking in. I have John Laird's number right here.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay, 831.
Uh-huh.
425-1503.
Okay, have you tried dialing it?
No, but I have before.
Okay.
I've called John Laird. That's at 701 Ocean Street. And then here's his other number in Sacramento, the Sacramento office.
Okay.
It's 916-319-2027. I also have his website address right here.
Okay.
www.assembly.ca.gov. I just wanted to call in because I heard you just say if anybody had his number to call in.
You're on the ball there, Andrea. I appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so I'm going to get off and keep listening.
Are you going to grab your wheelchair and head for Sacramento with these two? What are your plans? You got disabled access?
Oh yeah, we have disabled access.
Head to Sacramento for to get on John Laird's ass or the exterminator?
Both, I would imagine.
Yeah, I just saw John Laird at that special meeting last Friday with our city council. I'm pretty disappointed in the whole thing.
Did he mention anything about transportation issues that you think might be relevant?
Yeah, they were kind of talking about it, but it kind of went past me, you know, because they were going from one thing to the next, and that did come up somewhere in there, but I was really upset that community television didn't, you know, that it wasn't televised, because otherwise, you know, I usually tape those meetings and then go back and watch them, and the community television didn't do it this time, so it's like I caught what I could. Yeah, they did mention that. They did mention Highway 17, but he kind of sat there and just, like, I could kind of tell he was, like, he didn't want to say very much.
Andrea, I think Mike... Andrea, Micah has a comment here. What's your comment, Micah?
Well, just that it doesn't have to go past you, Andrea. I mean, the nuts and bolts are that last year our county government asked us if we wanted to widen the highway. We said no.
Mm-hmm.
They looked at us. Jan Butte specifically looked at us and said, there's more than one way to widen the highway. And now they're doing it anyways. They're applying for funds from the state to widen the highway, even though 57% of the population told them we didn't want to.
Yeah, I know, because the Board of Supervisors, it came up on the agenda a couple times with the board, and they were talking about it at the County Board of Supervisors, and yeah, some people came out and spoke out about it, and people were pissed off.
Right, the board.
Some people were really jumping on Ellen Peary.
Yeah, the board is the problem, specifically Jan Buttes and Ellen Peary. Those two are the those two are the ones that are blowing off democracy and doing anything hell bent to widen the highway.
I like I said, I wish I could have taped that meeting, but when the widening of Highway 1 came up, it came up and then got kind of swept out rather quickly, and then they kind of went on and were talking about some other transportation stuff, you know. But I'm just disappointed at all of them. The whole meeting, all of them. The council, Joe Simiti and John Laird, I'm really disappointed.
Andrea, you know, if you can, since our guest time are limited, feel free to call back and give us a longer report on what happened at that meeting, but I'm gonna roll.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks for calling
in.
I
just want to call and give you those numbers.
You did, and I appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I do want to say that, you know, probably what the council moved on to was talking with John about acquisition of the rail corridor and getting the rail trail going. And I want to mention that John's been a real ally in that. I mean, you know, it's not as controversial. It's easy for him to help, but he does help. And he is. People like Ellen Peary and Jan Buttes not only are widening the highway against our will, they're determined to stop the rail trail, the train, anything that where the public would have access to transportation without going bankrupt paying for it. They're against all that.
Why do you think these two supervisors oppose the rail trail?
I think they don't. It's not that they're necessarily against the rail trail. They're really against the train. They want to make sure that we don't. Although I think they're against the rail trail too. They're against anything that's public. You know, it's sort of like, I mean, it's the same paradigm.
Buy a car instead, that sort of thing.
Yeah, buy a car and drive it through the poor neighborhoods and get to your wealthy cul-de-sac and make sure that, you know, you don't have to see anyone.
What is their reason? I mean, surely they must have a more plausible excuse if, you know, when they talk about these issues.
Well, some people want that kind of life, you know. It's the American search for ultimate privacy, you know. They want to live away from everyone else. They don't want to deal with anyone or anyone's problems, and that's their, you know, it's all about property values and privacy. I mean, I don't think Jan and Ellen are alone. I think, unfortunately, this is a large minority of Americans who just don't care about the, you know, public space and would rather get to their house as fast as possible. So like I said, John has helped us with the positive projects in terms of getting the rail trail and acquiring the rail corridor and with ultimately getting train. It's just that he's refusing to get involved when we're going against the powers that be.
If you have any questions for these two, we're talking with Peter and Micah here in the studio. Give a call quickly because they may disappear. 427-3772 is the phone number to call, 427-FRSC. And again, if you don't catch them this time, you can call People Power at 425-0665. Or you can kind of sashay up to the Metro 7:30 in the morning. I guess you better arrange for the $50 scholarship beforehand, though, right? You're not going to be giving out $50 on the spot.
Hopefully not. It'd be better to know in advance. Whether you're paying for yourself or getting the scholarship, try to call me in advance. I'm going to reserve tickets and make sure that, you know, we're all taken care of.
How many people do you expect will be going to this?
Well, got 10 so far. I'm hoping for 30 or 40. We just started organizing a few days ago.
How can people help if they don't want to come along or can't come along?
Thanks, Robert. That's a great question. Mm-hmm. You can contact the state government. The information's on our website at peoplepowersc.org.
peoplepowersc.org. Of course, yeah. You can call John Laird's office and ask if he can help out in this situation. Maybe he could give you a ride up to Sacramento.
You could. He'll be trying as best he can to avoid your contact. But yeah, you could try that too.
You've had difficulty getting in touch with John?
No. He has met with us, and he's been, like I said, very gracious about some things, and he's just trying to stay out of the highway fight.
What's the local media's response been to this? I know you have a publication yourself, which you publish, called
the People Power Update, which you can get at any of the bike stores in town or at the bike church, which is where our office is. Or, like I said, it's posted on the web at peoplepowersc.org.
And, of course, you're planning a massive 5,000 yellow bike program across Santa Cruz soon, right?
Well, yeah, as soon as we get together.
Some years down the road.
The bike church is very busy providing, you know, really good, really cheap transportation for working class people and people that don't want to spend their lives driving around. So the bike church is an awesome program. You should come down at 703 Pacific, get your bike, fix your own bike with their help, and then sign up to go on the train.
There is an issue coming up at City Council which affects bikers, which has to do with a 10 minutes and be gone law that is hitting the City Council. At least it'll be hitting the Downtown Commission next, actually a week from today, at 8 o'clock in the morning at the early morning Downtown Commission special session being called. This is a law which I've talked about on the station before, and you've seen because we've talked about it as well, which would make it illegal to be in a parking lot or garage. So, for example, if you're a Food Not Bombs person, you want to go visit the Food Not Bombs meal on Wednesday next to the farmer's market, forget it, unless you bring your car or your bike with you. It would make it illegal to be in a parking lot or garage unless you have a bicycle or car. And even if you do, you'd have to be gone within 10 minutes. So it helps people actually to plan their time better because they'll be having to act in a more speedy fashion. What are the implications of this law for bikers, do you think? Would it be helpful in making bikers safer? Because that's the motivation. They're claiming that there are questionable campers in the parking lots and garages, instance of burglary and vandalism, lurkers and loiterers, sexual abusers, and, you know, criminals of all kinds in these dark spaces, and sometimes in the lighter ones, too.
Well, from the perspective of a cyclist and as the, you know, the people power guy, I don't think it really matters one way or another. I mean, we don't. You know, we occasionally park bikes in there, but for the most part, those are large wasted facilities that are given over to cars. I mean, as a human being, I'm concerned about more and more rights, more and more of our rights being taken away, you know, to enjoy public spaces that we paid for. But, I mean, you know, I know that you'd like it if I said it. For cyclists, it's a crucial issue. Honestly, it's not. But, you know, as humans, we should be concerned about that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And you, in fact, were concerned enough, or at least pressured enough by me to send off a few missing, but apparently they were real emails to some people about the issue, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, as the director of People Power, I only work on mobility issues and transportation issues, but, you know, I'm a human and I care about human rights just like everyone else, so occasionally I'll dash off an email to City Council and say, you know, just like Robert and lots of other people, we'd like you to stand up for the rights of people and not just of, you know, whoever it is that doesn't want to see someone in their parking garage. I mean, it's hard for me to say exactly who's behind it, but apparently someone's really upset if they see someone else out of their car window in the parking garage.
And it's a public safety issue for the right. For the employees of the department. According to Matt Farrell, there have been problems, and I'll be talking about this more. Peter, I've kind of ignored you because you're the musical backup here.
Oh, that's okay. Micah has so much to say on this issue.
Do you want to say anything that, you know, has come to mind as you've heard the discussion? Or do you want to sing anything before you go, perhaps?
How about, the wheels on the bus go round and round, round and round, round and round. The wheels on the bus go round and round all through the town.
There we go.
Very nice. Peter
has just been the most cheerful thing to happen on Robert's show for how long, Robert?
We got a younger audience now, okay, which is kind of following the show.
I've been playing for kids a lot, so.
That's good.
I've lost my edge.
we'll try to get you sharpened up again. So if anybody wants to call in, call quickly, 427-3772. I will notice you more quickly now because I actually have turned on the ringer so I can actually hear the phone calls. You've been listening to Michael Posner and Peter Weiss. I guess both of People Power. You're a People Power man, or you're just a
People Power member.
Okay.
We have 350 members throughout the county, including, as I said, John Laird and, you know, lots of other folks that, whether they're going to fight for it or not, have a vision of a more human scale.
Sort of like the Green Party has hundreds of people, but three of them come to meetings, or five of them do.
I know, we're a lot more active than that. We're going to Sacramento.
You are. Yeah. 10 of you at least, right?
Yeah, and there's we just sent them today 1,500 names on petitions and 70 postcards. They're receiving emails. There's a letter from the Sierra Club, which is one of our allies, on the way to Sacramento. So, you know, I mean, it is hard to get people to Sacramento, which is why I'm pleading with anyone listening to go. But we have been fighting this really hard. I mean, they expected Measure J to at least come close to passing. They needed 2/3 to pass it, and we handed them a defeat of, you know, 57% people against it.
Measure J was a large appropriation to Hyde and Highway 1, as well as to do other things, right?
It wasn't really to do anything else. There was this kind of propaganda shell game thing where they put money in it, took money from other places. Really, really, Measure J was to widen Highway 1, and the people of Santa Cruz said they didn't want to do it.
Do you want to give us any of the history of this whole thing, or are you how are you fixed for time?
Okay, I don't know if you need to head out, Peter.
I'm afraid I might get a parking ticket.
Transportation. Hey, the gloves are off here, folks. Now we know what's going on. People power, indeed.
But I'm willing to risk it.
All right, there you go.
So, have you been working on this issue for how long?
I've been working on this issue for 6-7 years.
And you probably have followed the history of the issue for longer than that in terms
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been doing bicycle advocacy for 15 years.
Can you give us some sort of a picture in time of what's been happening around this issue in Santa Cruz?
Well, what's been happening is that the business community has been pushing really hard for different types of transportation infrastructure that will subsidize business, you know, subsidize the growth of the economy. So for a long time, the primary choice of the Transportation Commission was a train, and that ran into problems of bureaucracy with Union Pacific and of different neighbor groups trying to stop the train. One of the biggest problems with transportation in Santa Cruz County is a small group called the Del Mar Association of rich neighbors who live near Aptos who just want to derail anything that might come near their neighborhood. So anyways, the train thing was running into trouble, and so the businesses kind of switched sides, and they said, hey, what about the highway? Widen the highway, you know?
So this is a relatively new phenomenon, this highway widening
proposal?
It's
in the last 5 years or something. It's pretty new. It's pretty new. And I think, you know, and what's driving the process, like the money behind Measure J was all large corporations, because everyone knows, certainly the planners and Ellen Peary and Jan Buttes know because they've read the studies, that widening the highway won't really make it any faster to go anywhere, but what it will do is it'll move a higher quantity of people, and that will artificially pump up the economy. So, you know, like if you have a pizza restaurant and if there's more space on the freeway, maybe you can convince someone from, you know, Pajaro to come work at your restaurant for minimum wage, and then, you know, you'll make more money. So that's what this is about. It's not about reducing congestion. It's about increasing the quantity of movement so that they'll make more money. It's the same kind of thing they do with Palo Alto and East Palo Alto or Berkeley and San Leandro or all of LA, really, is that by abusing geography, the corporate powers have a chance to, you know, if they control the geography, they make you move around to where they are instead of vice versa. And so as human beings, we spend more lives in our cars, more time paying for our cars, and we're at their disposal.
Has there been progress on the issue? You were on the air about 3 years ago in our old studio talking about the implications of using a car or using a bike versus using a car for poor people and what the significance of this is locally in terms of its ultimate effect on the human economy.
Right. I mean, I'm hoping that everyone listening is going to go to Sacramento and fight the system, but probably the most important thing you can do is not be involved in the system by driving a car. If you're driving a car, you know, you're certainly paying to drive a car, and you are absolutely propping up the man. I mean, the reason that the gross national product is so gross is 30% due to automobiles. I mean, you should take a look at your checkbook and your bills and think about how much of your precious life you're spending paying, you know, the big corporations for the dubious privilege of driving around in spaces that they've designed to contain you that are dangerous to your own existence as a bipedal. And think about, you know, what kind of world you're supporting by doing that. I mean, I know that not everyone has the choice to get rid of their car right away, but at least be conscious that, you know, what you're participating in when you're driving around that vehicle. And then do whatever you can to try to get it out from under their thumb.
We also spoke about how much more space is taken up by one vehicle and how kind of... It's sort of the mobile equivalent of a gated community or the mobile equivalent of a huge plantation as distinguished from a small room in an apartment,
right,
where a lot of resources and space are taken up when actually what's needed is a more equal and accessible kind of situation for a greater number of people.
Right. I mean, according to a textbook called Transport Geography, just roads and parking lots take up 30-40% of your average North American city, and that doesn't include, you know, auto supply stores and gas stations and garages and all that. So we've pretty much built our cities around the automobile, and the reason that is to facilitate consumption over public space. I mean, it's interesting that a few minutes ago, Robert, you were talking about this thing about the parking garages. You know, I mean, people are trying to sneak into the parking garage to get a few feet of actual public space to exist as a human being, because that's all there is left. I mean, they don't, you know, there is no public space. I mean, there's not.
Now, wait a minute. Our city council has been working on a plaza for years.
Right. Well, you know, it's nice, and Santa Cruz is slightly better, believe it or not, Robert, than other places in the United States.
I'm being sarcastic. They've been working on it, but they haven't gotten one.
I know, but I'm going to take it as if you're not sarcastic.
But they haven't really been working on it, was my point.
Well, you know, our city is slightly better. I'd say that our percentage is probably 30% and not 40%, and we do build parks, and we are trying to build a skate park, and things are slightly better, but we're part of an American society which supports consumerism partially by getting rid of your rights to exist without being a consumer. And the car is the vehicle of consumerism. That's why they want you in one.
So have you been much of an advocate for a downtown plaza? Has that been
on your agenda? Yeah, we have been.
Pedestrian mall?
We have been advocating a pedestrian mall. The reason that we're not being more forceful about it on a political level is because when we study pedestrian malls across the country, they need the support of the business community, or they really do fail. So the business community says, if we do a pedestrian mall, it'll fail. You know, no one will come here, and it'll just be a graveyard. And unfortunately, that could be a self-fulfilling prophecy, because the business community could sabotage the mall. So instead of trying to do some confrontational thing about, we are willing to be confrontational, obviously, about certain issues, with the pedestrian mall, instead, we're trying to slowly convince the business community that it would be a good thing for the whole community, including their businesses. And there's a group that does Santa Cruz Night Out, which is closing the mall around 10 times a summer. And it's been great for business, and the businesses support it. In fact, they've started closing the mall. The business association closed the mall like 4 times last summer. So, you know, whether we like it or not, we're in it together as far as the downtown mall, and we really have to persuade the businesses over time to close it.
You probably know that, of course, we had this unique mall between 1968 or whatever it was and 1989, when the earthquake gave Mayor Wormhout and John Laird and the police department the opportunity to completely destroy the Garden Mall and turn it into the Ramrod Straight, planter-free, deforested area that we have now. Was that supported by the business community originally? I'm not aware that it was, but actually it benefited the business community, I suspect.
Oh, yeah. There was a huge public process that people probably was involved in called Vision Santa Cruz.
No, I'm talking about the creation of the Garden Mall, not the destruction of the Garden Mall and the creation of the current thing under the pretext of Vision Santa Cruz, which I think was...
I don't know. I wasn't around in 68.
Yeah, I wasn't either. I just wanted, as a person with some historical insight into this...
It's a good question. I don't actually know.
And again, going back to the question of the controversies around public transportation and bicycle power here in Santa Cruz, people power on bikes, what have been the issues in the last dozen years that have mostly... been of importance around this, to understand this history?
Well, we got bikes on the buses so that those two types of transportation can interact. There's now bike racks on every bus. Not enough bike racks, but there's some bike racks. There's an ordinance in Santa Cruz, which is unique for the United States, or there's not too many cities, that you have to have bike parking. That's why there's a lot of bike parking on Pacific Mall, for example, which really encourages the idea that maybe you don't have to drive a car. There was going to be a road through the Arana Gulch, the greenway over there. We stopped the road and instead supplanted it with a path to put in a bikeway, which we're still fighting for. Some of the neighbors don't want a bike path across the gulch.
And some of the homeless advocates as well.
Right, well, there'll be plenty of room for homeless people to sleep other places in the gulch, I'm sure. We just got the bike lane on Beach Street made permanently, the two-way bike lane. It was illegal, as crazy as it sounds, to ride your bike, you know, going west on Beach Street, and now that's been resolved. There's a two-way bike facility, which has been paved. We have a bike lane approved for Soquel Avenue on the part that's currently dangerous, and that should be put in next year. Those are some highlights.
There are a number of concerns I've heard about police officers ticketing people on Pacific Avenue for biking the wrong way. Some seem to make a real fetish of it, like Officer CSO Bechtel, Pam Bechtel. I've singled out by name because of her zealotry around this issue. What's the story? Is that a concern of people power? And is it a danger? Is it a significant danger to ride the wrong way on Pacific Avenue on a bike such that people should be ticketed for it, in your view?
I don't know if people should be ticketed for it. I mean, but I try not to do it. I think it's somewhat dangerous. I mean, the great thing about the mall these days is there are so many pedestrians there, and there's so much interaction and movement in all kinds of, you know, ways in the mall that that we really shouldn't be riding the wrong way on the mall. I mean, which is the same reason there shouldn't be cars driving either way on the mall. I mean, you know, there's people darting into the street and people not looking on the sidewalk, and I try not to do it. I would encourage people not to ride the wrong way. It's always hard to say that bicyclists should be ticketed because, essentially, we create safer places than the cars. I mean, bicyclists are more or less the victims of the infrastructure. So
not according to DeCenzo, I can assure you.
Yeah, well, you know, according to DeCenzo, everyone's out to get him, but that's a different issue. PeoplePower is working with a pretty compassionate and, you know, seemingly really good judge, the new traffic commissioner, Kim Basquette, and she is proposing a program whereby bicyclists could go to bike traffic school that would be run by, you know, PeoplePower and other people instead of paying their fines. So we're pursuing that program with her. If we get it, then instead of paying $150, whatever, you could pay $35 and spend 4 hours riding around and learning how to take your rights on the road as a bicyclist.
And all these issues, of course, will be discussed at the next meeting of PeoPower.
The next meeting? I don't
you guys
know.
Have,
the next
you guys have meeting
meetings?
Or what?
We do have meetings, but I'm not sure when the next one is. It's in, I didn't bring my calendar. It's in like 2 weeks. But you can call me at the office, and we'd love to get you involved with anything you're concerned with.
425-0665.
Yeah, whatever your concerns are, particularly if you're a bicyclist, but also if you're just someone that wants to preserve public mobility, wants to fight auto culture. Come on down, and we'll work together.
Thanks, Micah, for coming in. We've been talking to Micah Posner, and with the occasional musical barrage or a side note from Peter Weiss.
Ba-dump.
There you go.
I just want to throw in impervious surfaces, parking lots and roads, impervious surfaces run off into the bay. Bad for coastal sea life. Exactly.
Indeed.
Exactly.
So,
all right, thanks for having us, Robert. Thanks for your work and for keeping pirate radio out in the public there. That's we need public mobility, we need public radio, and we need public space.
I have to agree. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, also at www.freakradio.org. This is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides, and we have another hour coming up, so don't go away, but stay with us and call in if you got a notion, because we'd like to hear from you. That is to say, even though I'll be alone in the studio, there are lots of people out there that you can be talking to, not just me.
Fat and docile, big and dumb. They look so stupid, they aren't much fun. Cows aren't fun. They eat to grow, grow to die, die to be et at the hamburger fry. Cows well done. Nobody thunk it, nobody knew. No one imagined the great cow guru. Cows are one. He hid in the forest, read books with great zeal. He loved Che Guevara, a revolutionary veal. Cows say tongue. He spoke about justice, but nobody stirred. He felt like an outcast, alone in the herd. Cowed all drums. He mooed, we must fight, escape or we'll die. Cows gathered around because the stakes were so high. Bad cow pun. But then he was captured, stuffed into a crate, loaded onto a truck where he rode to his fate. Cows are bummed. He was a scrawny calf who looked rather woozy. No one suspected he was packing an Uzi. Cows with guns. They came with a needle to stick in his thigh. He kicked for the groin. He pissed in their eye. Cow well hung. Knocked over a tractor and ran for the door. 6 gallons of gas flowed out on the floor. Run, cows, run. He picked up a bullhorn and jumped up on the hay. We are free-roving bovines. We run free today.
We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Cows with guns. Crashed the gate in a great stampede, tipped over milk truck, torched all the feed. Cows have fun. 60 police cars were piled in a heap, covered in cow pies, covered up deep. Much cow dung. Black smoke rising, darkening in the day, 12 burning McDonald's. Have it your way. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Cows with guns. The president said, enough is enough. These uppity cattle, it's time to get tough. Cow dung flung. The newspapers gloated, folks sighed with relief. Tomorrow at noon, they would all be ground beef. Cows on buns. The cows were surrounded, they waited and prayed. They mooed their last moos, they chewed their last hay. Cows outgunned. The order was given to turn cows to whoppers, enforced by the might of 10,000 coppers. But on the horizon, surrounding the shoppers, came the deafening roar of chickens in choppers. We will fight for bovine freedom and hold our large heads high. We will run free with the buffalo or die. Oh, oh. Cows with guns.
Not exactly your animal rights compilation. Cows with Guns, Dana Lyons. I don't know, maybe a little of this and a little of that. A couple of quick announcements. I want to remind folks that on Saturday at 3:30 at Loudoun Nelson Center, there's going to be a training for folks circulating the Marijuana Initiative, which was featured on the front page of today's Sentinel, or Sentinel, as I like to call it. The article had Andrea Tischler talking about the issue, and it had City Attorney John Barisoni denouncing the issue. And again, if you want to help sign people up to get this this petition rolling, it's because they only have a month and a half to get it together. They need to have it all done by April 20th. You can show up at the Loudoun Nelson Center at 3:30 on Saturday, and I'm actually scrounging to find that article, see if it's if I can make a few comments on it. It was a not terribly good article, but it probably deserves a comment or two. And of course, I'm finding everything but the article. It's the usual. It's too bad, by the way. I ran into Rico Thunder at the Kinko's as I was doing my copying. A bunch of new flyers are out for those of you who want to read more of my propaganda. And, Wednesday, March 8th. That's just, that's yesterday, but it isn't the right day. Rico wrote a letter about the spy scandal. Some of you who have been following the issue may remember that he's the guy who Well, he was called in. His organization was surveilled. It's the DIY parade stuff, and he tried to respond to a letter by the undercover agents who surveilled and infiltrated his group. I guess Wesley was the name of one of them. And the Metro Santa Cruz has declined to print his letter. At least that's his understanding. So hopefully he'll put it online at indiebay.org, which is an alternate media site, which now actually prints Becky Johnson, my producer, who has previously banned from Santa Cruz Indie Media for politically incorrect opinions and behaviors, and some somewhat politically stupid behaviors as well, I might say, but that's just my view. I always take a particular view. I've been doing a lot of letter writing recently. And while I assemble my massive letter file, I'm going to let you hear a little of somebody else's voice. Here's some interviews from the street.
Okay, well, it's about 20 to 12 on Wednesday, the 1st of March, talking with...
Hi, Lobo.
And another anonymous person, perhaps, who may have a comment. We're here in San Lorenzo Park. And, Lobo, you say that you've observed police behavior recently that kind of disheartens you?
As a matter of fact, I got approached myself, but I noticed that it seemed like wherever you were going around town and everything, if you had backpack gear or backpack or bicycle or you're dressed kind of warm, they were kind of like approaching, like me, for example, in several different areas of town, different officers warning us about, like, staying out of doorways and all this stuff that they were
not having. Not standing under the awnings of borders, for instance?
Right. Well, I mean, it was raining and everything. For example, there was three of us. We were, of course, the library was closed. It was evening, about 7 o'clock, and it was raining like crazy. I mean, it was coming down.
Which day was this?
The other night, 2 nights ago.
Monday or Tuesday?
The hard rain, that night. And then... But, a young officer came up there, and, of course, they made us leave in the rain.
Where were you?
We were at the library branch.
They didn't want you to stand at the eaves of the library.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Did they give you a dry place to go or suggest there was a legal reason that you couldn't be there?
No. The officer, of course, I did state those reasons. I mean, he wanted me to just get up and go and I didn't feel like, it was my, that I was being treated right as a citizen, and I questioned my rights. I like, why,
what time of the evening was it?
Kicking me out in the rain and everything, and who called you, First he didn't want to tell me his name, I want to know your name too, and we managed.
What was his name?
His name was Joe Hernandez, but we managed to get, a really young officer, a good officer, but... We managed to get on a communication level to where he saw me as a human being. Of course, I had to fight for a little bit of my rights because he was just going to boom down the road. And I was going to go down the road, but, not without my dignity, Anyway, so we headed out in the rain, and needless to say, we did find another place, the doctor's office, and he said we could stay there and everything.
You actually asked the doctor if he could stay there?
Well, he's seen us, and he said everything was fine, and the janitor and the building and everything. And
how many of you were there?
There was three of us.
And about what time did the police officer drive you away from the library?
About 7:30, in a pouring down rain.
Did he say there had been a complaint, or did he give any explanation for his behavior?
I would say that it's orders. They're getting orders on how to...
But what did he say?
Excuse me?
What did he say? Did he give you an explanation?
Oh,
you're speculating yourself.
Sure. Somebody had called and said that we were there.
Did he give you a code section that indicated why you couldn't be there?
No, he didn't give anything like that. Which
so you were trampling the flowers, or threatening a burglary, or reading too much in the dark, or
no. Well, I think we were being pretty quiet. Trying to stay dry.
That is a crime if you're homeless, you know.
Well, yeah, it's...
We all know homeless are all wet.
I have a hard time understanding, because I don't really consider myself homeless. I consider myself a human being, but I mean, I do tend to get labeled that way,
And indeed. Now, you say that this has happened more than once. This wasn't just one incident of an officer being perhaps inappropriately responsive to some paranoid concern by somebody else who is anonymous, apparently, in this situation, right?
Well, no. To me, this stems into the fact that it's people that don't have places to live that basically they don't want you around. They don't want to see you. They don't care if you're getting wet or dry. Or
did this happen more than once?
And I say they, but it's like it seems like there seems to be a general feeling with maybe people in Santa Cruz and the police and the people that run the police department that maybe we shouldn't be around. And we should go to shelters and different things like that. You know.
Have you been to a shelter?
I don't stay in shelters here. No.
Why not?
Well, it's kind of personal to me, but my story goes back. I think I was about 13 years old when I first became homeless, and so I've been in a lot of soup lines and a lot of shelters and stuff, you know. And I'm in hidden 50s now, you know. And it's like, to me, it's the same old bowl of soup it was then, you know. And it's the same old bread and everything. It's not, you know, nothing's changed.
Do you feel it's undignified, or
it's like, well, it's not undignified, but it breaks my heart when I have to go and see other human beings, you know, that are being categorized, that are beautiful people that are basically being shoved away because they don't have the other fortunes that other people in the world do, and it's kind of sad for me to tell you the truth, and that's one of the reasons why I don't like to go, because I do have a heart, you know, I'm a human being.
You've been outdoors for about 40 years now.
Most of my life, yeah. I've done a lot of national forests and traveling, and of course I drove 18-wheelers at one time back and forth across the country and got to see a lot of things and stuff. But, you know, periods of my life, I've been off and on, homeless due to probably my lifestyle, the fact that I like to travel, and when you get to places and stuff, my income levels and the things that I could do, my abilities, you know, and where you're at. And so another reason I guess I don't go to shelters, like I'll go out and hold my sign
What does your sign say?
Usually I have something simple like hungry, you know, or just need help or whatever like that, you know, which is the truth. You know, I'm usually trying to get food or get money to do laundry or, you know, little things that I need to get by, survive. But I do find it interesting because I do meet interesting people that care about you, which on a personal level, which is these, you don't meet these people at the shelters. You don't meet them in the soup lines. You know, you don't go there looking for work or anything like that because there are 100 people looking for the same thing. And it's the same thing that's been going on for 40 years that I personally, you know, can tell you about. And nothing's changed at all.
Are you looking for work?
Not necessarily. I have certain skills and things that if I can fit into, I'll do that, but I don't find that I'm the type of person that can go out here anymore in my life because of my illnesses and things and just apply myself the way I used to.
We've gotten turned off into your situation, which frankly is very interesting. I find it interesting, but originally when I came up to talk to you here on this sunny day in the park, you said that it wasn't just, I got the impression, it wasn't just this one instance with Officer Hernandez, or what was his name again, Officer?
Well, actually, he didn't want to tell me his first name, his last, because I was just actually having a conversation with him, you know, and wanted to know his first name.
Yeah.
You know,
just his last name was?
As a human relation.
I understand. But he didn't approach you as a human being, he approached you as a police officer. Hernandez was his name. Had you heard, did you get the impression, or did you have any personal experience, or have you heard any accounts that indicate to you that yours isn't the only case where this is happening, that people are being driven into the rain?
Well, you kind of might say I have a chip on my shoulder because I've been homeless for, you know,
most anybody
of my
else
life
been?
Like that, no, that's not.
Has anybody else been driven into the rain that you know about?
Yeah, all around me, everywhere I go.
Tell me about some more cases that you know about.
Well, for example, the same officers that were going around that were approaching me were approaching other people that were around.
You saw them doing this?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And you saw them, in essence, people then who had previously been under the eaves of a building had to then moved away after
they seen you walking into a parking lot underneath a deal where they would follow you in there, and then first they would, you know, they would run your IDs and all that stuff, and then they would say, well, we saw you come in here, and we, you know, we want to know what, we don't want you to be here, and then whatever. Or I guess a citizen would make a complaint, and they would come out and tell you to go.
Now, you're Any other? Has this happened to you any other time recently?
Yeah. It happens every day everywhere you go.
I know. I'm trying to get specifics, though, about what your personal knowledge of this happening either to you or somebody else has been in the last week, let's say.
When did this happen? Yeah, just at the library.
Right, I got that. But any other instances of it happening that you know of particularly than in the last week, either to you or somebody else?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's been happening, but the question is, give me another example.
Well, if I did, I would probably have to, you know...
Don't name the people, but just name the place it happened and the approximate time.
Well, I knew some people that were walking towards a parking garage to stay warm, to get out, basically get off the street in a dry spot.
And yesterday or the day before?
This was just a couple of days, within the same time period or so. And before they could actually get into the parking garage to, you know, sit down or anything like that or just get out of the rain, the officer followed me in and then, of course, you know, ran all their IDs and told them...
Same officer?
No, I don't know who this was. I have no idea. But, of course, they, you know, they weren't arrested or anything, but they, you know, they all, for example, were going in different directions trying to, find some place, I guess, just to live and be here in Santa Cruz.
You know, would it surprise you, Lobo, to know that there's a law that they're trying to pass that would make it illegal to be in a parking lot or parking garage for more than 10 minutes unless you're parking a car or a bicycle?
I have no idea with the kind of laws like that or anything.
What I'm saying is, would it surprise you to know that they're thinking about passing a law like that?
No, it wouldn't surprise me because I... You know, just the way that I feel that I'm being treated, you know, as an American and being here in my lifetime and everything, and from my fathers, my grandfathers, which I know they're all Americans, and you know, they fought in wars and were in the military and things like that, and along with myself, and you know, I don't want to do anything to break the laws or anything, but I want to have right to the land and be able to, you know, feel that, you know, that what is around me is also a part of everything and everybody else that, you know, that I agree upon and respect and love and life. And just it just seems like a crime when it's a shame when you can't walk down the street and you can't have feelings of dignity just for the simple things that, for example, you know, just sitting in the park and looking at the ducks and stuff.
Any hassles for here in the park or not?
I don't come here very much, but it seems to be pretty quiet, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know.
I've seen a group of folks earlier there on, it's a hill that's kind of overlooking the duck pond where there are about 10 or 12 folks actually passing around a marijuana pipe and, you know, which I think is an improvement over booze, frankly, and pretty mellow. And it's they're next to this orange mesh that's, for some reason, I guess maybe it's protecting the trees. Anyway, Lobo, appreciate you giving us the update. Any final words?
Just for you brothers and sisters out there, you know, just keep your heads up, you know, and don't let anybody, you know, steal your face, you know. It's... We're all out here. We all got rights, you know, and we need to stand up for them, you know, as far as we need to be more aware of what just, you know, what we do. What I'm trying to say is what we are doing that's not breaking the law, that's actually being told that we're breaking the law. Because it's kind of hard to walk away, to walk around, you know, and be caught up in this confusion of, you know, what to me seems to be a simple right.
Thank you, Lobo.
We're talking with the mammy.
I've got a frog in my throat there. So, if you want to call in, you got any comments on any of this? Has this happened to you? Have you been told to move out from the library into the rain for no apparent reason? Probably not, unless you look homeless or something of that effect. Of course, obviously, we're only getting one person's side of the story, but... It's interesting. Because I like Matt Farrell personally. He's the parking guy in the Public Works Department that's pushing this new law that would make it illegal to be in a parking lot or garage for more than 10 minutes, even if you're parking your own car and your own bicycle, as I understand the wording of the first draft of the law that he presented. in a kind of a sneaky move to city council, was going to rush right through on January 10th, but some of us caught it and raised a clamor about it, and so they pulled it off the agenda. Not probably because we raised the clamor, but because I think they were embarrassed that they hadn't even sent it to have real discussion in their own downtown commission advisory body. So they went to the downtown commission, and there we raised the clamor again, both on behalf of people who are poor and homeless. I should say we weren't delegated by them to do that, but it was our feeling that it would have that nasty impact and give expanded powers to the police that they didn't need, and expanded threatening powers to employees there who, if they just wanted to get rid of people, would, you know, tell them leave, or, you know, even if it's raining heavily outside, simply because suddenly there's a new law that says, you know, these whole six blocks of public space that had previously been open to you are now closed, you know, unless you have a vehicle or a car, and even if you do, you have to be gone within 10 minutes. So, you know, as I said in my letter to the Good Times, you know, better hurry up, you know, hustle with those diapers. You've got 8 minutes left to get that diaper on, you know, and move those kids. Let's get rolling here. It's a completely absurd law as it's written, and I got some information from Matt Farrell last week, who, as I said, I kind of like him. He's a very congenial guy. We've talked at length on numerous subjects, but the fact that he's backing this kind of law puts me in a position where it's an awkward position for me, too. Anyway, this whole thing is being fast-tracked, and it's being fast-tracked onto a special downtown commission meeting that will be happening in exactly 1 week, Thursday, a week from today. However, it'll be in the morning at 8 o'clock in the morning. So in order to rouse everybody's spirits, Jumbo Gumbo Joseph Schultz, who provides soup and food for the SAFE, Society for Artistic and Freedom and Expression Street Performers Group, that gathers every Wednesday in front of New Leaf Market, will be providing some hot soup or some hot food of some kind on Thursday morning, a week from today, at 7:30 at City Hall, where hopefully we will turn out in some numbers to persuade the downtown commission that they should definitely put a thumbs down on the whole thing. They're just an advisory body, and apparently the people pushing this are Matthews and Ryan Coonerty. Matthews is, of course, Mayor Cynthia Matthews. They used to call her 2-Minute Matthews. She has since returned to the traditional 3 minutes, for which I commend her, although we need much more than that. We need a completely different agenda, too. But thank you for that, Cynthia Matthews. But don't know thank you for pressing for this ordinance, and particularly pressing for a swift city council consideration of it without considering, this is my main concern, real alternatives. I mean, I always like to say, you know, it's not that the merchants are a bunch of bigots. It's not that the parks employees are a bunch of troll-busting, narrow-minded, power-crazed, hypersensitive types. No, no. It's rather that they had some real problems. It must have been a real problem here and there, and they must actually have some real justification for this kind of a crazy proposal. But, of course, when I put the email request in to find out what the emails were between the departments, what the complaints were, even without not the names of the people complaining, but just some codification of how many complaints were received, what were the nature of the complaints, what were the problems, I got absolutely zero from the police department and nothing of any substance from the public works department, the city manager's office, the city council offices, the parking department, nothing. They are completely, they're claiming that that they have no paper trail at all behind this law, which is, I suppose it's possible, but it seems highly unlikely to me. And so we're confronted with, of course, the standard thing, a bureaucracy that's covering its ass, lying, or trying to simply ignore the public's request. It's actually a lie to say you have no public records when you do. That's you know. I don't know, it's criminal behavior. It certainly should be criminal behavior. If you're a public employee and you're concealing public records, particularly nasty if you're concealing public records in the middle of a public process where you need those public records to be able to make a clear assessment of whether something should be passed or not. In any case, I was not able to obtain any records. And I also understand from various members of the Downtown Commission who I called last week, and I talked about that on Sunday, they weren't able to get any records either. Now, finally today, I went to Matt Farrell's office, and 5 days late, or beyond the time he said he was going to provide this to me, he provided me with some stats that I actually spoke about, I believe, on the air on Sunday, which simply talk about the number of public service calls to parking lots. I say parking garages, but this law also applies to parking lots. So any public parking lots, you know, don't think about walking through them. That's trespass. Unless you're parking your car or your vehicle, I mean, or your bicycle, in which case, get out of there in 10 minutes. The stats I got cover the four parking garages. And I think I talked about these on the air because he was good enough to give me a kind of a verbal description, leaving a message on my machine. But this is something that he got he compiled on March 1st. So he compiled this about a week ago. And he was sending it to the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, which is peculiar. I'm not sure why he was sending it to them. This is going to the Downtown Commission, which is supposed to review this law before it goes to City Council. Normally, it would be reviewing this law at its regular meeting 3 days before the council meeting. But apparently, Coonerty and Matthews want to move this ahead. So they're prevailing upon Julie Shattuck, the president or chair of the Downtown Commission, to move it up with a special meeting. Unprecedented, according to Laura, the secretary the staff member who does the minutes and covers the meetings of the Downtown Commission. They don't do this. They don't hold one meeting and then a week later hold another meeting. That doesn't happen. This is happening because somebody wants to fast-track this. But I think, you know, again, I'm trying to be the nice guy and say, well, you know, they must have had some serious assaults. Sheila Coonerty, who was the former chair of the Downtown Commission, still on it, was talking about her daughter, you know, feeling unsafe in the parking lots. I always have a problem when people start saying, I feel unsafe. You know, it's like the folks feel unsafe downtown with all them Negras in the area, you know, with all them homeless people. They feel unsafe. I feel like, you know, well, let's have some psychotherapy for these folks. Let's do some hug therapy, you know. But unless you're talking about particular criminal behaviors, the idea that people should be moved along in order to facilitate a Disneyland-like atmosphere for some shoppers or to make a scene congenial for sheltered adolescent women or men. I mean, you know, I'm afraid, when you go into public, you go into public. And if somebody is fucking up and is getting threatening and starts extorting you or something, that's one thing. But what's actually happening is quite the opposite. The city is using the police and the hosts and a whole system of laws to intimidate and to criminalize all kinds of innocent behavior from poorer people and particularly from homeless people outside. It's actually become a crime and has been a crime in Santa Cruz for decades to sleep after 11 o'clock at night. That's actually provided in the criminal code, in the city's criminal code. Sleep after 11 o'clock at night on any public property, in any vehicle on public property, and that's a crime, a $90, $100 crime with the new court assessment fees. So you have a situation where life-threatening behavior, or I should say life-sustaining behaviors, are being threatened and being prohibited by code. And, you know, in other eras, in other places, you might call this a kind of a gentle form of genocide. What you're trying to do is you're trying to say, we won't allow you to breathe in this space. We're not going to allow you to sleep. It is a crime for you to do what you have to do every night. So it's something that needs, obviously, we need to send in the human rights investigators from out of town to embarrass these glib, Rotkin-esque city council members who feel somehow that this is perfectly natural. I mean, you know, if we didn't make it criminal for people to do what they need to do, everybody would come and do it. That's Rotkin's constant line on this issue. He's used the phrase 10 million homeless people would come. You may remember in an interview with him I played, a discussion we had about a week or two ago, actually from 10 years ago, but he has pretty much the same line now as he did 10 years ago. Anyway, the parking garage situation This proposal is coming up in a week at the Downtown Commission. I'm also going to be raising the issue at City Council, which has a meeting next Tuesday, every second and fourth Tuesday of every month, except December, when the City Council likes to go on vacation, you know. In the middle of a cold winter, they're happy to go on vacation while making it illegal for other people to sleep or shelter themselves at night and refusing to address the winter shelter crisis. But there will be a council meeting Tuesday, and I believe at 7 o'clock I will be there giving a speech. Here's someone who may give a speech even before then. Let's see what this caller has to say. Hey there, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert. Just Andrea real quick. I just heard you mention a couple minutes ago about that special meeting next Thursday. Now, did you say 7:30 a.m.?
You got it. The meeting is actually at 8, and we're serving hot food at 7:30. We're going to have a protest rally.
I'm just wondering if it's the same meeting that I'm thinking of, because I got this notice of public hearing in the mail, and right at the top, it's the place, the Santa Cruz City Chambers, 809 Center, Thursday, March 16th at 7 p.m. Hearing body, Planning Commission.
No, that's a meeting about 12 hours later.
Yeah. Do you know anything about that? Or?
The planning, I don't. And if you learn something, let me know. I also want to, now while we're mentioning it, answer the anti-war group is meeting even as we speak, for those who are interested, in the Loudon Nelson Center. They began at 7. I apologize for not mentioning it earlier on the show. For those who want to get involved in anti-war organizing, check them out. They're at the Loudon Nelson Center right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just wanted to know if you knew anything about this meeting. I'm going to go to it next Thursday night. It says 108-122 2nd Street, so I have a feeling it's probably the cottages next to us that have been condemned that are being demolished. So ought to be exciting.
Keep us advised, and maybe we'll see you in the morning as well.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
A little early. Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
Thanks,
okay,
Andrea.
Care.
Bye-bye. And I had a call from another Andrea Tischler of the Compassion Flower Inn a few moments ago, who wanted to emphasize that indeed they are doing this training at Loudon Nelson on Saturday for the marijuana initiative, which will make marijuana enforcement the lowest priority. I'm going to actually try to dredge up this story for on the Sentinel on the web here as I talk. And you can go there at 3:30 and learn how to register city voters. You might think it's easy to sign them up on a petition, and it's not that hard. But there's some things you should know about doing it, because the address Santa Cruz does not quite cover the real city of Santa Cruz as far as the actual technical city limits goes. And you have to be careful that you register people who are actually in the city, even if their address is Santa Cruz. Doesn't mean they're in the city yet. They have to be, I think, this side of 7th Avenue or some such thing. So check that out. And if you can't go and you want to, but you still want to help with petitions, give a call to Andre at 466-0420, 466-0420. I'm looking at the Sentinel story by Shanna Banana McCord, as I call her, Sentinel staff writer. This is the woman who has the city council beat. She'll actually be a witness in my trial on the 17th, I believe. Probably a reluctant witness, but she saw me being arrested. And that's an issue I've talked about on the air before. But she also is covering the marijuana beat. I've expressed a lot of reservations about this whole initiative because of its, well, because people, they didn't go to city council first, because they are, it doesn't seem, they haven't checked out how effectively it's working in Oakland, or how effectively the idea of making marijuana enforcement the lowest priority worked in Berkeley, and why it didn't work after a time, and what kind of checks and balances are really needed. I didn't get any substantive answers from anybody over there, but I mean, I'm in favor of the principle. The more effectively you can, even symbolic gestures are, you know, a step of a kind. We really need to have the same people who are doing this, you know, marching on Bob Lee's office, our district attorney, and demanding people like Alonso Eversole, who will be going to court tomorrow for growing marijuana. And I guess he was held in jail for 47 days. You may remember, I don't know if I've mentioned that, but he goes to court after everything was dismissed, because Michael Corral, to his credit, went to court and testified right before the jury trial, which apparently the DA was so eager to hold that, you know, the amount of marijuana that Eversole had was permitted under state law. And even though Eversole didn't have a medical marijuana card, he had a condition which he persuaded Almquist that this was a trial it didn't need to be. Well, immediately after he did that, Archie Weber, the district attorney, I should say the mini district attorney, the underling of Bob Lee, immediately files charges again. And here goes Ebersole off to another trial, because you can apparently repeat the filing of charges. It's a felony to grow medicine for yourself, to use herbs in this area. And that's in liberal Santa Cruz, folks. Medical marijuana is being prosecuted in liberal Santa Cruz. So this law, this proposed initiative, would actually... It really looks forward to a time when different cities do this, and it's done at a state level, when the actual law for marijuana itself is taxed and regulated, not just medical marijuana, but all marijuana. And that's a good thing. But we need to put pressure on the authorities that are pushing forward with this absurd and abusive. It's a form of extortion, intimidation, it's kidnapping, it's all these things, and it's all done under color of law. And it's all very profitable for a bunch of lawyers and a bunch of judges and a bunch of police officers and departments. And it, of course, loots the coffers of the people who get ensnared in the web. And of course, it shreds the Constitution and it creates an atmosphere of fear for the rest of us. So let's get down and talk about the real issues locally. I mean, sure, support the Marijuana Initiative. Give a call at 466-0420 to Andrea Tischler to help her and others sign and get this initiative on the ballot. We've only got a month and a half to do it. But also call Rotkin and the city, because they can put it on the ballot immediately by a 4-3 vote. In fact, they don't even need to put it on the ballot. They can pass it by a 4-3 vote. And if they don't, there should be massive protests against them for not doing so. I mean, the idea that everyone sits patiently and waits for a November election while it's like waiting while Abu Ghraib goes on. We're going to have a vote on Abu Ghraib in November. No. We go after it now. We demand it stop now. And that, of course, is something that, you know, I don't know. I'd like to see it. So Barisoni, our city attorney, in this article in the Sentinel on marijuana says, the initiative defies state law because marijuana is an illegal substance and would pit authorities between conflicting directives, except in the case of medical use. Creates a lot of problems. It's got some real legal problems. There's not a word in here about the misery that's created by the current law, about the absurdity of the current law. This is our city attorney who's paid hundreds of thousands of dollars per year, who's got a million-dollar contract, not just here with the city of Capitola, he and his wife. Why are we hiring these reactionary people? Actually, John is a liberal guy. You know, I've talked to him before. Again, these are people I don't dislike personally, but you put him into an institutional position like this, and he becomes, you know, a Republican in drag. It's just amazing. I can't believe it. And there's a quote from Theodore Carey, who has called this show in the past: "If police work is about making the public safer, we really feel whether or not adults are using marijuana privately in their homes does not affect public safety," because that's one of the priorities. You would go after, you know, sales of marijuana to young people first, but you wouldn't go after people in their homes. And I don't see why Barisoni would ever have a problem with this. He might say, you know, there might be a legal problem at some point, but I support the concept, but he doesn't even want to go that far. Telephone poll conducted in October questioned 400 registered voters in Santa Cruz showed 82% agreed or somewhat agreed that adults using marijuana should not be criminalized, said Andrea Tischler. We want the police to focus on violent acts. Of course, the real violence is against the marijuana users, you know. Again, it's all turned around, just as in the homeless situation. The entire thing is twisted. And 10% of the city's 34,000-plus voters must sign the petition by April 20th to qualify. If 15% of the registered voters sign up, the group could force the city to hold a special election. That would be very nice. The sooner the better. And because if it does that, then the city council might vote fast, just pass the damn law, which is pretty meaningless anyway. You know, unless you have real checks on the police department, it doesn't mean much. It means something as part of a growing statewide movement if it's done in city after city. It's like asking the president to be impeached. I think it's a good idea. Definitely. Let's do it. This city has not done it, by the way. You might have thought they have. No, they just asked the House Judiciary Committee to investigate the whole thing. Arcata has called for impeachment. San Francisco has called for impeachment. I believe Berkeley has called for impeachment. I got to double check those things, but I'm pretty sure these three cities have actually called for impeachment. Santa Cruz under Mayor Matthews and Shadow Mayor Rotkin has not. You know? And until we start taking action and getting out in numbers and demanding this, it won't. Because, you know, some folks are sitting pretty. You know, they're not, their kids aren't going, you know, overseas. They oppose the war. Oh, yeah, they oppose the war. But they don't want to rock the boat locally. You know, that sort of thing. Let's not rock the boat. Let's not actually stop the abuses against people who use marijuana, even medically. No, no, let's not really actually open up an Office of Compassionate Use. Let's wait until the Supreme Court rules on the subject. That's our former mayor and at current shadow mayor, Mike Rotkin. It's disgraceful. I put through a call to him asking him to kind of clarify a couple of marijuana issues. He hasn't got back to me yet. Ed Porter, I want to point out, has gotten back to me on a couple issues. He's, as I mentioned before, he's declined to be on this show, but he is at least making, I think, an effort to at least in one form or another respond to the questions I'm posing. Mostly it's sending me to other people. I don't have these stats, go somewhere else. And I believe he probably sincerely means it. I'm asking him, you know, where are the stats on tasering? You know, what about the citizens' rights card that they were working on 2 years ago? Oh, Mike Rotkin knows about that. So maybe I'll get a report from Rotkin, and maybe I won't. I also requested Cynthia Matthews, Mayor Matthews, give me a five-minute period at the next city council meeting during the oral communications period, which usually starts at 7 o'clock, to make a presentation around, I'll probably be talking about the 10-minute law, the proposed 10-minute law in parking lots and garages. She gave 5 minutes to a business person representing a business association to oppose the raising the minimum wage, saw about a month ago, and I'm expecting her to do the same to me, left her a message that I would be expecting that, and we'll see if she has one standard for the businesses and one standard for homeless advocates. Of course, it's amusing to even put that into a sentence, because obviously she does, but we'll see if she's going to, at least for the purposes of public consumption, appear to be fair on this issue. And I suspect, I'm kind of thinking she might well be fair on this issue, because it's there is currently a lawsuit, which I've talked about. I'm not only going up for criminal prosecution on April 17th for standing at a microphone and waiting for my 2 minutes to speak before city council and being told to leave the chambers and declining to do that. But I have a lawsuit along with, I'm alone in the lawsuit, but the lawsuit concerns actions by former mayors and current city council members against members of the public, which constitute a pattern and practice of harassment, and which constitute a practice of First Amendment violations, which where people are discouraged from coming to city council to speak and from speaking at the microphone. And that has been postponed until September in federal court in San Jose. But it's still an active lawsuit. And in being an active lawsuit, the city council is on notice that if it comes after me in a discriminatory fashion, these instances will be added to the lawsuit each time they do that. So I have no idea if this is really going to have an impact on them, but perhaps it will, and perhaps it will be beneficial. Let's hear a little more from the street.
Survived another bout of pneumonia.
Yeah. And
what's your name, sir?
C.J. Stock.
C.J., you're the man whose guitar playing will be made criminal by the new 10 minutes in a parking lot or garage law.
Do that?
Not yet, but it's coming up on the fast track thanks to Mayor Matthews and council member son of Neil Coonerty, Ryan Coonerty, the attorney on the city council, who also has a...
Can we legally do that?
Well, if they can make it illegal to sit on 95% of the sidewalks, I guess that they feel, and it's a good question, it may be unconstitutional. That's one of the concerns we're raising.
One of the things I would think, you know, being a street musician and stuff, I've made my living on both ends of that parking garage, and I've never caused anybody any problems at all.
You're operating in the parking garage across from Clouds on, yeah. What's the street there? I think it's Church Street.
Yeah.
And you... Yeah, I have you observed much vandalism or abusive behavior? Because that's the plan.
I have seen people hang out and they do deal the drugs and stuff like that there sometimes. And there's been a few broken windows and stuff, but I've never witnessed anything like that.
We just heard from a homeless guy called Lobo that police 2 days ago were following people around, driving them away from, they were driving them away from the eaves of the library and other parking garages into the rain. Have you seen any of that happening?
Yeah, I've seen it. I've experienced it. You know, Linda and I first got back into town.
That's just part of the homeless triaging program where they give you pneumonia so that you kind of cuts down on the public expense.
I don't know. I tell you what, I just went to Dominican, and I spent 2 days there. That wasn't for free, and I got no money to pay that. You know what? And what they're trying to do is drive. I can't leave because my daughter's in Scotts Valley. And so I've got to stand tall and do the do. And a lot of these people, just they'll give them a ticket and they'll disappear.
Now, you've been a street guitarist for how long?
24 years.
You've actually turned out a CD that we played on free radio.
Yes, I have. And I'm very proud of that.
What's your feeling about this law? Because the downtown commission is going
to... It's wrong.
They're having a special meeting probably on March 9th, which is being rushed by Coonerty and Matthews and by Chair, I guess, Julie Shattuck.
It's March 16th, as I said. At the time, we thought it was going to be at an earlier point. C.J. Stock, the musician I was talking to, was shivering, and he actually, he was shivering several days before, and he reported prior to this interview he'd just come from Dominican Hospital where he was diagnosed with pneumonia.
Chair of the Downtown Commission. What would be your advice to the Downtown Commission about this law?
I would back off of it and pay more attention to the riffraff rather than the people who are trying to make a living. And I make a living there, and they're going to cut my living off.
So what should they do about the problem of people camping or sleeping in a garage? Because they see that as a problem.
It is a problem, and that's why this is happening.
So should those people who are sleeping or camping be driven out into the rain?
Why don't they make it more available to have safe, dry places to stay when it rains? Why don't they kick it up and have more... I mean, like, the Armory is in Watsonville.
The Armory actually is in De La Vega.
Well, I don't know.
But it's hard to get into, and it's often not terribly inviting to people to secure checks. They actually make you stand in the rain at the Armory, too, I'm told.
I don't know. I've never been
Maybe
there.
I feel rain is good for the poor. What do you think? A little rain must fall into every life.
But some people who live in houses, they get to... go out and play in the rain, and then get to go get warm and dry. The homeless don't.
I think you're showing a little too much sympathy for, as you call it, the riffraff. I mean, we need to get rid of them riff and raff, and maybe we can give you a special tattoo as a musician where they would go after all the other people but avoid you. What do you think?
No.
Don't like that either?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing pleases you, does it, CJ?
Not much.
Good to hear you, man.
My friend.
Okay, well, outside the, I don't know what the name of this parking lot is. Does it have a name? It's right across from the Cinema 9 and Clouds on Church Street, Lot 3. And we're talking with
Steve.
Steve, you're a man with a sign, disabled, need help, anything, God bless, and a limp, it appears. That's your disability? Or?
Yes, right now I'm trying to get on permanent disability, and the government's killing me. They are literally killing me. They're making me jump through hoops and things I never thought that I would have to do, because every time they wanted my money, they took it.
So, how long have you been in Santa Cruz?
I've been in Santa Cruz for 12 years.
Have you been disabled the whole time? Or?
No, I haven't. This has gotten really bad in the last couple of years.
And are you outside or are you inside?
I live in a car.
And how is that? Because, of course, you know it's illegal to sleep in your vehicle in Santa Cruz.
Well, it's illegal, but it's also illegal to sleep outside, and I can't afford to sleep anywhere else.
Have you been hassled by police or authorities for sleeping?
No, not yet.
Is that because you're well hidden, or because you're liked, or for some other reason?
I don't know what it is. I'm I don't litter. I don't make noise. I'm very discreet. You know, I don't urinate or defecate around the neighborhoods, and, you know, I don't...
Your police officers seen you sleeping, or have you just sort of kept a low profile?
Low profile. Very low profile.
Now, here you're visible. You're in a side street. But as I came up, a person gave you a sandwich, which looks pretty good. It's all wrapped up. How frequently does that happen? Are you, and how many hours do you spend out here per day?
I spend a lot of hours out here per day. About 8 hours a day I spend out here, and people bring me food, which is big. They drop a dollar on me now and then, or some change. Well, you know, that's wonderful. You know, it puts gas into my van. Mm-hmm. But people bring me food. Like my sign says, anything. People have brought me clothing, bedding. You know, and it's all appreciated. You know, it's gifts from God. You know.
Now you're standing under a sort of a parking structure here. We're right next to the sidewalk. How would you feel if I were to tell you that there is a law afoot going through the downtown commission that would make it illegal to be in a parking lot or garage for more than 10 minutes unless you're parking a vehicle or parking a bike? What would be your reaction to that?
I think it's a little inane because I don't know what they're trying to do. They're trying to get the people to not sleep in here. They're trying to get the people to not panhandle. But
they're trying to get rid of you. But that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, exactly. They're trying to get rid of us.
Now I heard an account from a man named Lobo, which unfortunately I thought I was recording, but apparently I was not. That he himself was driven out from under the eaves of the library. He wasn't even panhandling or anything of that sort. He was just trying to get in out of the rain by an officer, Hernandez, I believe it was. Could have the name wrong. And that's happened to other people who try to use the parking lot garages for shelter. What's your reaction to that?
Well, there's a lot of homeless people here. Last count I heard was 3,800 homeless people in this area. They make it easy for you to get food. They make it easy for you to get clothing. But they don't make it easy for you to sleep anywhere. And that's a big problem.
Have you suffered any kind of, or seen any kind of police misconduct? Not necessarily in the sense that they might be enforcing bad laws, but just things that have kind of repelled you that you want to criticize, or alternately positive things you wish to commend?
Well, the only thing that I have seen the police not take care of around here is the people that come out of the theater, that come out of the restaurants, that litter here. There's one, two, three legal stop signs in this parking shelter that are not enforced. I've seen people hit. I've seen children almost hit by cars because the people run these stop signs. You know?
How many hours a day would you say, and how regularly are you in this spot here across from Clouds in the parking lot 3?
Well, I usually spend every day here. There is another person that comes here when it rains and gets here earlier than I do. And
CJ the musician?
No. This is another person. Mm-hmm. And they sit here, and at that time I can't use the spot, so I just do the best I can.
Now, there is a certain competition between people for spots. I know musicians and folks who are just trying to survive, as you are. The downtown ordinances that were passed 3 or 4 years ago, actually they were passed a decade ago and made worse 3 or 4 years ago, actually kind of cut back on the number of spots where you can be. Do you feel that there's only a certain number of places where it's legal for you to be, or where you feel safe and comfortable being as a person advising folks that you're, you know, in need here?
Well, I have never, this is the only place that I've ever flown a sign. I've never been down on the mall. Because when I go down on the mall, I hear a lot of people that beg. And I do not beg. I wish people a nice day. I say, how are you, if they acknowledge me. I really enjoy it if they smile. I enjoy it when they come by and talk to me. They don't necessarily have to give me money. It's just like, or food or anything like that. It's nice when they just come by and acknowledge you and say, what's wrong? Because I know eventually somebody's going to come by and they're going to say to me, would you like a job?
Has that happened to you?
I've had a couple people come by and say that they would check it out for me, you know, and let me know. Since, you know, nothing's happened since, but that's okay. You know, today is today. Tomorrow's tomorrow. I can't do anything about that. So I just deal with today best I can.
Any words out there for the people in the radio audience about conditions in Santa Cruz generally for people, folks who are outside and poor, living in their vehicles as you are?
Don't get in this position. Avoid this position like the plague. I moved here 12 years ago. I used to be somebody. I've been a professional musician all my life. I've played in every
club. What do you play?
I play the electric bass and the guitar. I've played in every club in this town. I've played in clubs that don't exist anymore. I had a, you know, I worked in a bank, you know, a well-known bank in this town that has several branches. But circumstances have led me here, and this is where I sit. And I advise people to be very cautious. And you know, you can't tell the future, but you can prepare for it.
Have you still got connections with people in the community? I mean, are you now regarded as a pariah because you're low income and out on the streets? Have your old associates cut you off?
Pretty much. Yeah, I've had, you'd be amazed at the amount of people that walk by me that I used to know. I have musicians that walk by me. And
Do they recognize you, or they just ignore you and recognize
you? Well, they ignore me. I've had people look dead at me, and I don't know if they recognize me or not. I don't know. They just walk right on by, you know. So it's
like the song, huh?
Yeah, that's exactly right. But that's okay. You know, I don't have any control over that. You know, I try and, you know, I just try and control what I can control, and that's, you know, the little bit that I have. And I know it'll get better, you know, because one way or another. I'm sick right now. I've been sick for 2 months.
What do you got?
Pneumonia.
You know, you and apparently the musician CJ, too, I just interviewed. He just got out of the hospital. He had pneumonia as well. I guess you might get pneumonia if you're driven out from under a parking lot by the police into the rain, wouldn't you?
Yes.
So
yeah.
I don't understand either you or he were. I know other people who have been driven out. And I don't know if they've got pneumonia, but it seems like one of the recipes.
Well, you know, I'm fortunate. The police have been very good to me. You know, like I say, I don't harass people. I don't do anything. I smile.
A car you can go to in the event of rain, whereas other folks who don't might try to take shelter here in this parking lot, for instance.
Yes. Even though it's illegal and I'm not crazy about it, I am out of the wind and I'm out of the rain. And that's important. Of course, it's a great big van with no insulation, so it's like being in an ice box, but it's still better than being outside.
And I assume you try to keep warm with blankets, but remember, it's illegal to cover up with a blanket after 11 o'clock at night in Santa Cruz. Now, wait, actually, in a vehicle, it is not illegal. It's just illegal to sleep. So feel reassured by that.
Well, I'm very reassured by that. I guess I'll sleep during the day and fly my sign in my van at night under my blankets.
Right. Are you, here's a man who's very creative. Thank you. We've been talking with
Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
And that almost wraps it up for Bathrop's Pier's Broadsides. If you want to call the Downtown Commission and register your opinion because you can't come in next Thursday at 7:30 in the morning, actually come in at 8 in the morning when this meeting starts. But if you want some hot food, come at 7:30 to City Hall on March 16th, Thursday. You can give a call to Matt Farrell at 420-5184, 420-5184. And tell him what you think of this law if you have a thought about it. I'm going to try to post more information about the law on the Indy Bay website, the Indy Bay Santa Cruz website, so you can check that out, too, if you want. Next Thursday at this time, I hope to have attorney Bernard Pregerson, who's a public defender or with the Public Defender's Office and particularly experienced in drug court. He will be able to tell you what you will be facing when they haul you in because everybody was too busy, working on other things to deal with the issue of stopping the war against the drug prohibition war, which has been going on for decades, and funding the police department and funding all kinds of insane and abusive political careers. He'll talk about what it's like to be in the drug court and what the details are. We will run him through his paces. On Sunday, when I come back between 9:30 and 1, and by the way, there's some indication that my show may be shortened by the Free Radio Collective because spaces are filling up and more people need want airtime, and it's unfortunately limited airtime on this station here, although it'd be nice if some more stations started, so grab a transmitter and get going, folks. It's not that expensive to start a station. On Sunday, I'm going to have with me a man who's recently been to Venezuela and who with me was arrested at the Capitola recruiting station 2 years ago when we sat in to oppose the war in Iraq and oppose military recruiting. I only wish that more people were still doing that. And if anybody wants to engage in any protest activities, please let me know. There will be, of course, I guess, a week from Saturday, there's going to be buses going up and carpools going up to San Francisco to oppose the war that's going on. Now, I remind you that ANSWER is meeting in Loudoun Nelson even now as I speak. I think it's 7 to 9, an anti-war group forming, no doubt, some strategies, hopefully some local strategies. I had a lot of other issues I wanted to raise. I was going to talk about the Patriot Act and what's been cooking with that. Of course, it was passed by an unhealthy majority again, showing me that in spite of one scandal after another, one revelation of public torture, massive provocation of war crimes and civil war abroad, we have a terminally corrupted Congress. It's amazing. And it's depressing, too, because it puts you in a position where you realize that the only change has to be so fundamental that it's going to disrupt all of our lives. That seems to be the reality of it, and I'm not ready for it. I'll tell you that right now. But for there to be any meaningful change, it sounds like that's what's going to have to happen. And I was going to analyze the Patriot Act, or at least give somebody else's analysis of it, which maybe I can do on Sunday because I'll have a longer show, at least for the moment, and we can pick it up there. As I said, I'll be going to court tomorrow. For those who are interested in seeing how a pitchess motion works, come at 10 a.m. to Department 1 in the Santa Cruz Court Building at 701 Ocean Street. If you want to see Alonzo Eversole fight his marijuana case, come at 9 o'clock in Department 7. That's Eversole, E-V-E-R-S-O-L-E, and check it out. Let's see here. Looking over my many stories on Iraq, 8,000 desert during Iraq war. I think Amy Goodman covered this a little bit. According to Bill Nichols, USA Today, at least 8,000 members of the all-volunteer U.S. military have deserted since the Iraq war began. Pentagon records show, although the overall desertion rate has plunged since September 11th attacks in 2001, since the fall of 2003, 4,387 Army soldiers, 3,454 Navy sailors, 82 Air Force personnel have deserted. The Marine Corps does not track the number of desertions each year, but listed 1,455 Marines in desertion status last September, the end of fiscal 2005. Desertion records are kept by fiscal year, so there are no figures from the beginning of the war in March 2003 that fall. Some lawyers who represent deserters say the war in Iraq is driving more soldiers to desert their service. The Pentagon is cracking down on deserters. Majority in the U.S. fears Iraq's civil war. Poll also finds growing doubt about Bush. This is from the Tuesday Washington Post. An overwhelming majority of Americans believe that fighting between Sunni and Shiite Muslims in Iraq will lead to civil war, in the middle of the civil war, actually, and half say the United States should begin withdrawing its forces from that violence-torn country. That's half. Should begin withdrawing. That's withdrawal now, isn't it? At least beginning withdrawal now. The survey found that 80% believe that recent sectarian violence makes civil war in Iraq likely, and more than a third say such a conflict is very likely to occur. These expectations extend beyond party lines. More than 7 in 10 Republicans and 8 in 10 Democrats and political independents say they believe such a conflict is coming. In the face of continuing violence, half, 52% of those surveyed, say the U.S. should begin withdrawing forces. 1 in 6 favors immediate withdrawal of all troops. However, while about one-third prefer a more gradual return. Well, one-third and one-sixth. It's not clear what the... But withdrawal seems to be the word of the day, but not the Führer's word. That's, of course, Führer Bush. The survey also found growing doubt that the Bush administration has a strategy in Iraq. Two-thirds of those interviewed said they do not think the president has a clear plan for handling the Iraq situation, the highest level of doubt recorded since the question was first asked 3 years ago. But an even larger share, 70%, questions whether Democrats in Congress have a plan for dealing with Iraq. Well, it looks like the American people knows what's going on, at least those polled by the Washington Post on this issue. So that's the story with Bathrop Spears Broadsides tonight, and I'll be kind of following up on some of these issues on Sunday. I will be in court, as I said, tomorrow if you want to check me out. Maybe I'll wear my bathrobe. That way everybody will recognize me, and I'll be able to pick up a few hot chicks, perhaps, or maybe make a name for myself. Or just, you know, dramatize the issue of the sleeping ban, which is what the reason I've worn a bathrobe in the past. Sometimes I wear it to keep warm. You know, these are cold times. You going to wear your bathrobe to court tomorrow, Dennis?
I don't actually have a bathrobe.
Oh, for heaven's sake. No wonder you're so surly. You need a bathrobe, Dennis. Maybe we should do a bathrobe drive here. Actually, I have a number of older bathrobes I could pass on to you if you'd like. Anyway, that's the story with Bathroom Spears Broadsides tonight. I'm going to play you one last song from Kristen Lems, and then I'm going to turn the microphone over to the questionable musical tastes of Uncle Dennis, who will be taking you through a trip into the past with some rather fine recordings of music that we now hear in elevators as we go through town. But some of us like it nonetheless, and I'm one of those people. Thanks for being with me on Bathroom. I'll be back on Sunday at 9:30, 423-4833.
For two friends of mine that had a baby, they decided to have the child at home and did so. And they instructed the midwives that when the child was born, for the first 5 minutes, they didn't want to know its gender. They said they just wanted to appreciate its babiness with no strings attached. Except the birth strings. Terrible pun. I'm sorry. And so it was. So it was. They had the child, and for 5 minutes they had it in a little blanket, and they just loved it and appreciated it. And then finally, almost anticlimactically, they just unwrapped the blanket. And I thought that was an awfully beautiful idea, and I wanted to write a song about it, and I did. And this is that song. The name of the song is The First 5 Minutes of Life.
Gender the babe can do. The first 5 minutes of life. No need to start with grown-up schemes. If parents and child hold to their dreams, anything is possible, or so it seems, in the first 5 minutes of life. Welcome the baby to the world, the first 5 minutes of life. Welcome to the boy, welcome to the girl, the first 5 minutes of life. Now I'm not gonna say which kind they had. It doesn't really matter, be it lass or lad. And the freest moment that baby had was the first 5 minutes of life.
Thank you. This song comes from the writings of H.P. Lovecraft. It's called The White Ship.